More of Lake Effect now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Nigella Lawson describes herself as a food enthusiast. She's a household name, a best-selling author, and the host of several successful TV shows shown on the Food, E! And Style television networks. What she is not, she will tell you quite emphatically, is a chef. She is a cook, and that word choice is crucial in describing Lawson's approach to food. Her newest cookbook, Nigelissima, Easy Italian-Inspired Recipes, is the latest in her efforts to convince home cooks that all they need to create delicious meals is a little knowledge and a love of cooking and eating. Nigelissima is, as the title says, inspired by traditional Italian recipes, but updated with Lawson's distinctive twists. Nigella Lawson was in Milwaukee this spring as part of the book tour for Nigelissima, and she stopped by the studio to chat with Bonnie North. She explained before she wanted to be a cook, she wanted to be Italian.
It wasn't because of the food. The food came later and the food cemented this relationship. I must have seen an Italian film and thought that it looked so beautiful. And I suppose when you're not skinny and dark-haired, seeing a culture that celebrates that when it seems otherwise, especially sort of even in the old days, the sort of thin blonde image is forever being idealized, it gave me something to clutch onto. So I suspect there was an element of that. But really, there was another, perhaps more serious foundation, which is that I was a linguist at school and wanted to add Italian to my portfolio when I went to university. And so in order to be Italian, which I felt I had to be, and also in order to study Italian at university, I had to learn to speak Italian. It's not taught in schools. And so I went to work in Florence, to live and work in Florence. And there I really did fall in love with the food. And I fell in love with the food in perhaps the best way, which is I worked as a chambermaid, didn't earn much money, so had to shop and cook very carefully. And even if I went to restaurants, I had to order the cheapest things. So I learned about the value of simplicity and also about how to focus on what ingredients I could afford and make them taste good. I was also very lucky, even though it does sound like a cliche, but sometimes life is like that, which is the little hotel I worked in. I was befriended by the nonna, the granny of the establishment, because she got a bit lonely in the daytime. And although I, as staff, was not allowed in the kitchen, as soon as her son and daughter-in-law left, she would usher me in and I'd sit there and watch her cook and chat to her. So I learned how to speak Italian and how to cook Italian.
And I love the description that you had of it, is that you learned to speak like a greengrocer.
I'm afraid I did. I'm afraid I did because I suppose if you're a chambermaid in Florence, you learn that sort of Florentine dialect. And it did amuse them at Oxford University enormously, when everyone else probably sounded extraordinarily patrician. Nowadays, I'm afraid I just sound like an English tourist. Even though I go back to Italy every year, you know, unless you're there all the time, you know, one gets rusty. The wonderful thing about Italians is that they are so accommodating and welcoming. It's not like the French, who like to point out your every grammatical error and, you know, personality flaw. The Italians are very warm and welcoming. And I found this to be the case not only in terms of language, but, you know, I had, for me, something very moving, which is that this book was translated into Italian and was published in Italy last fall. And I went there and I, you know, it's an impertinence, really, for me to have written this book. And they were so warm and welcoming about it. And that was very, very touching. And I feel, in a sense, and one should never seek validation because one is what one is, whether other people like it or not. But certainly it did make me feel accepted.
You were comparing the languages between France and Italy, the French and Italian. Do you find that the cooking represents, the way that they approach food is reflected in that ease that you talked about of the Italians? I mean, do they approach food in the same way? Do they approach cooking in the same way?
The French and the Italians?
Yeah.
Very differently, I think.
Yeah.
And actually in the same way that they approach language. So the French are very codified in their language, you know, and you're forbidden to use imported or loan words, whereas the Italians welcome them, and I rather like the way they just slip them in. You know, a bow window is a bovindo, spelled B-O-V-I-N-D-O. Why wouldn't it be? The French wouldn't allow that. And the Italians have that more relaxed attitude towards cooking. But it isn't just, but they are relaxed, but they are also incredibly formal in the sense that their traditions are their traditions, and they're very fiercely regional. And this is where writing about Italian food from the point of view as a foreigner actually works, because someone from Tuscany will have perhaps scant regard for the cooking of Lazio, you know, around Rome, or certainly won't cook in that way. But if you're so far removed because you come from another country, then they're more likely to be interested, because it doesn't feel like an erosion of their own traditions. But for me, why Italian cooking and food is, I suppose, such a match with my own particular feelings about the kitchen, is that France finds its highest expression in the great chefs and the great restaurants, whereas Italian cooking, its heart, its soul, everything resides in the home kitchen and the home cook. And I'm not a chef, so for me, Italian food is very much my kind of food. And I think that's why Italian food is so popular throughout the world.
In the United States, certainly in the last, 20 years or so, we've moved away from the idea that everything Italian has a red sauce. You know,
yes.
We've gotten to know that there are so many of these regional traditions that you talk about. Are the Italians moving those traditions forward, or are they clinging very hard to what they once did?
Before I answer that, I want to defend Italian-American cooking, because it has an authenticity of its own, because it belongs to a historical moment, and it is how it evolved, like language. Now, the Italians seem to me to be very wedded to their own traditions, and they will not veer from them when they're cooking those traditional recipes. However, they are extraordinarily open to other cuisines now in a way they weren't before. But that's also because they didn't have access to the ingredients and they didn't actually have access to the recipes. But now, because of the internet and cable TV, I have to say Italians have got a passion for the Anglo-American baking tradition. So if you're in Italy now, they will talk very excitedly and proudly about I muffin. And they do make crumble, which they often call spricciolata, but they do also call it crumble. They're very interested in adding to their tradition. They don't really have an enormously strong baking tradition because of their very late industrialization and because of the immense poverty in Italy. Homes did not have ovens until relatively recently. And when I say relatively recently, I mean historically. So that is new. And I find that Italians seem to have a very lively interest in other cuisines, because actually up till now they have been perhaps more hermetically sealed.
Do you think that immigration has something to do with that, that the more porous boundaries of the EU have helped with that, bringing in other kinds of culinary traditions?
I'm not sure that has made a huge difference, because actually, unlike a lot of the other European countries, they don't seem to have the same, for example, Germany has got a lot of Turkish and Greek food. France has got, for obvious reasons, Algerian and Vietnamese cooking. But what I think has made a big difference is that because so many Italians left Italy and went to Argentina, America, Australia, England, that they in turn return to the old country to see those members of their family who still live there, or else just as a sort of nostalgic sort of route following enterprise. And because of that, they bring back the food that they've adopted in their native countries. I think they're listening to people of Italian descent telling them, oh, and this is how we cook it in Australia, or this is how we cook it in America. When I was in Venice last time, for the first time ever, and I've been to Venice nearly every year now for 30 years, I saw avocados being sold. And now, that's very strange, because normally they do not import other people's fruit and veg. And you could argue it's not a good thing, and many people would. Nevertheless, I think we all are very grateful. Well, I speak as someone who comes from an island that if we didn't import food, we'd be living on cabbages and parsnips for most of the year. So I think that we sentimentally think that Italians are not allowed to do anything except for, you know, be nonna in the kitchen cooking what they've always cooked. But actually, we all are interested in the cuisines of other people and, you know, ingredients that maybe we haven't encountered before. Why shouldn't Italians do likewise?
And incorporate things into their traditions. Exactly. It's like, oh, there's a new spice or here's a new herb that I haven't.
Yes, yeah. They are slightly wary of that. I mean, they do not like it. For example, if you were to make spaghetti carbonara and suddenly decide you want to put, as you often see in non-Italian recipes, suddenly someone puts a mushroom in or an onion in and they think, what is going on here? You can't do that. However, if you want to make a pasta sauce with different ingredients and don't call it by an Italian name, that's fine. I was worried when I went to Italy that they would all, you know, beat me about the head with their skillets for writing recipes that were not authentically Italian. But they said to me, no, actually, it's difficult because we're very, very bound by tradition. And that wonderful though that is, that can be very constraining. You, however, being non-Italian, can take liberties and you can play. And that playfulness then can rub off on us. And somehow that gives us permission. So I thought, when I was at school, I was always told I was a bad influence. So I'm quite happy now I'm grown up to be told I'm a bad influence, as long as it's received warmly.
And it's in the service of wonderful food, which
yes.
This is. How did you pick the recipes for this book? Because you had to not obviously choose everything that you might have liked to include.
Two things made it easier. One, I had an absolute rule that I wasn't going to repeat any recipes I'd written before. You know, I've written so many Italian recipes that actually that ruled out an awful lot. And it ruled out most traditional recipes. I also find that I put in those recipes, which I found I repeated most often in my own kitchen at home, which is the only place I cook, so that if I found a recipe, however much I liked it the first time, if I found I didn't cook it again, whether it's because I forgot about it or because it required too much effort, then I didn't put it in the book. You know, I have a kind of choose it or lose it approach. I chose recipes that I felt evangelical about, that I knew that almost that I wanted to push onto other people. I've always had what I call the school gates test, that when I write a book, because I always have to whittle things down because it starts off and really it could have been three times this length, that I imagine a fellow mother is at the school gates and is saying, oh, hi, I'm going to cook your ... tonight. If I feel anything other than excitement and joy, that's it. The recipe gets scrapped. It's not enough for me that a recipe works. I have to want to cook it about three times, and I have to be tremendously excited and positive about the idea of anyone else cooking it.
That's a wonderful way to weed them out.
It is. And actually, you know, sometimes a recipe just hasn't found its time. So sometimes I find that recipes that don't get put in a book do not die. You know, I have a life outside the printed covers. Plus, I hope I'll write other books. So maybe it's just that it isn't right yet now, or just simply that I've gone over too many pages.
Are there recipes in here that might surprise home cooks for maybe the combination of flavors or something different and unusual that they might not be expecting?
Oh, it's very hard for me to know exactly. I mean, I try to think very much of the flavors of Italy, which often creating recipes that aren't exactly Italian. So, for example, I think of Italy as a nation of licorice lovers. And I made really a bit like the sort of chocolate pudding you would get here, but instead of using chocolate, I melted some licorice sort of lozenges in hot water. That's quite an odd thing to do. And then, you know, it's the normal thing, bit of milk, bit of cream, some cornstarch. And that's quite an odd combination, but it really works if you're a licorice lover. And otherwise, I'm trying to think, yes, I suppose so. I mean, because generally speaking, the sort of pesto that everyone knows and loves is from Genoa and has, you know, basil and pine nuts. And I did a version which is from Sicily, which has almonds, tomatoes, capers, anchovies and raisins or currants, because, of course, Sicily has that Moorish influence, so you will get that incredibly easy, no-cook sauce, just put it all in a processor and blitz it. So I suppose you have to be convinced first, well, why am I putting raisins in my spaghetti sauce? But actually, it works, doesn't it? Because everything is about balance. So if you have the saltiness of some anchovies and also the slight sharpness of some capers, it automatically makes sense that a couple of raisins are going to balance everything out.
That sounds delicious. It sounds
very easy.
Yeah. And that was one of the other things that I know you tried to do in this, is to keep things relatively simple for the home cook.
You're being very kind to me when you say that I tried to do that, but I don't have the expertise to make complicated recipes, and I am a home cook, and also I cook in the same context my readers cook, which is after a busy day and when I need to get supper on the table quickly and feed, you know, quite a few people and also try and organize homework, so that my recipes suit my life, so therefore I think they suit other people's. It's not a marketing strategy, and it's not because I'm trying to be kind. I know my limitations.
Nigella, it has been such a pleasure to see you again. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Nigella Lawson is the author of 8 internationally best-selling cookbooks, including her latest Nigelissima Easy Italian-inspired recipes. She spoke with Bonnie North in an interview which first aired in April. That's all for today's edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich, and I'm so glad you could listen today. I hope you'll have a chance to join us tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.